Hey, welcome to the Mead House. I am here with my buddy Chris.
How you doing? Good to be back. And now we're going to talk about contests.
Right. Entering mead competitions. We talked about in the first returning episode that I have been a mead judge for a while now. I enjoy judging meads more than I enjoy competing in competitions, to be honest. But I know you've entered some competitions.
I only entered one, but it was awesome, even though I screwed up thoroughly. Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that. We've talked about working at competitions, which, you know, Chris is seeing what I'm telling you about. Like, you got to get to these competitions.
And I'll be honest, you said, you need to come out of these things. Why? And then he almost strong-armed into going to the Valkyrie Horn. Had the best time.
He's not even judging, but you don't need to be a judge to get the judging experience, because the judges, you know, if Chris brings me a flight of meads to say, hey, here's your thing for the judging round, he knows we're friendly. I'm going to, hey, this was from last round. You need to try this. This is real good.
And that actually happened, because there were people I met out there in the first round. Here, no, try this one. That's really good. Yeah. And actually, at the end of the show, Tracy came up and said, best of show. Don't finish it. Best of show.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness.
Yeah. No, I think I took, I forget which like final flight judging I did for category or something like that. But I'm relatively certain, like after I did a judging for some kind of fruit, something, maybe it was sweet, maybe it was semi-sweet. I had like two or three things like, here, this is second and third place for whatever this category was. You need to try these.
Yeah.
Phenomenal stuff.
I mean, the flavors you can get out of those things, you know, it's inspirational.
We talk about having a list and adding to that list, and this is a VM tax. The task of trying to manage that list.
I laugh because managing the list, that's almost comical.
Competitions add so much to that list. You see so many different, because everybody has a little bit different perspective and a little different approach, and you see the way that people are doing it. So much fun. I cannot recommend it enough.
Oh, yeah. It was so unbelievable. And obviously, one of the best ones I tasted just in waiting while you guys were judging was a lychee mead.
Mm-hmm.
And lychee is such a very, very sweet but subtle flavor.
Yes.
And I'm sitting here, I can actually taste the fruit in that.
Right.
It was amazing.
Like, well, kind of like the peach that we had. Was it last weekend?
Yeah.
Or last week?
Last week.
Yeah, we had, it's subtle. Some of these subtle flavors, though, they present so beautifully.
You know, you're sitting here, oh, when you get past the sweet, that's what it tastes like.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's just unbelievable out
there. There are some really great flavors that are strong, will punch you in the face. Hibiscus, you do that right. That's like, that might as well be red wine.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like it.
By the same token, you've got some of these delicate flavors. Like, that lychee was intense. That was great. Not strong intense, but, like, just presented so nicely.
Yeah, I mean, it straddled right up to the border of too much. Mm-hmm. It didn't cross it.
I have had, like, lychee and syrup or lychee, like, little, like, fruit kind of snack things.
Mm-hmm.
That tasted less fresh than this mead.
Yes.
As far as fresh fruit goes.
Exactly.
Really well done.
But anyway, competitions are incredible. I mean, plus, you know, you're in a community of like-minded people, and we keep so many secrets, like none. I mean, our biggest problem is you can't get us to stop talking about what we're doing. Not only will we tell you how we did it and the finer details of doing it, we will give you recommendations on making it better even than we get.
Right. But that's the whole point of judging, too, is that there's an entire chunk of this where it's like, hey, I notice you have this off flavor. Here is my suggestion for what you should do next time or in similar batches to avoid that off flavor. Try this instead. Try, you know, up your fruit percentage to alcohol. You know, the point of this is to say, yeah, no, this is good, this is bad, but also how to improve, how to make this more. Sometimes you get, like, raspberry, for example, as a fruit. Sometimes you can get very jammy flavors from it. Sometimes you can get very fresh flavors from it. Sometimes jammy tastes nice. Not often, but sometimes.
Usually,
I want fresh. And if I can give you tips or tell you, hey, a little bit more fresh raspberry here would be better, I will be honest with you and say, hey, no, this could be better in this regard.
And to be honest, when you're there, have a little bit of a thick skin. They're not doing this to be mean. They come across that. Don't get me wrong. People say, you need to do this. They're being mean. They were actually trying to help. And, you know, and take it like that, because we really want to expand what everybody knows.
Yeah.
And it's really important. But I would like to talk endlessly about the one. I mean, Tracy Kunfus is now somebody who will talk to me on a regular basis about making better meats.
Yeah.
She sent me recipes. She sent me her recipes from her book.
Yep.
There are no secrets. There are none.
Why keep secrets?
Yeah, why keep secrets? They had an entire panel on making chocolate meads with samples.
Yeah.
Some of them are so dark chocolate bitter, I couldn't enjoy them. A couple of them, including Tracy's, is why I met her, were so smooth. And you're sitting here, and you know, this is after almost a full day of tying so many meats. And you're sitting here going, this is good. And my filter had turned slightly off. In the middle of her presenting how she did this thing, I said, this is really good. Can I get the recipe? She said, sure. Talk to me later. And just moved on like it was nothing.
Yeah.
And that's how I met her. And it was awesome. And she's a great lady.
No, the meat community as a whole, especially these meat-specific events like Mazer Cup or Valkyrie's Horn, or I think Orpheus is another big meat-specific one. There's Texas Meat Cup. There's a, I want to say there's a half a dozen now that are mead-oriented, meat-specific. Yeah, they are, people that are involved with this are very free with their information. They are very friendly and very equitable towards, hey, just, this is what I did. If you get a better way to do it, tell me,
yeah,
so I can make it better too. Okay.
Yeah, it's awesome.
These meat-specific homebrew competitions are not the end-all be-all. Chances are, regardless of where you are listening, in the continental United States or maybe in other countries, there are homebrew clubs in your area. They probably have some kind of a mixed competition. It might be beer and wine and cider and meat or some combination of those. There may be multiple homebrew clubs, and they may have, they may have people that are more focused on beer or mead or cider or wine. There's, in the Kansas City area alone, I think there's 4 or 5 beer like focused homebrew clubs. Some of them have members that are really interested in mead and do a lot of fantastic meads. There's also a Cellar Masters Club that is more wine focused than anything else. And yeah, no, these guys have an annual competition almost all the time.
And you need to look in your area for these things. And even better, you know, okay, well, I'm going to go into the horrible part of this. Shipping your competition entry to the competition is impossible.
It's a pain in the butt.
It's horrible.
It's not impossible, but it's expensive, and it's time-consuming, and it's a headache, and you're biting your nails for the 2 to 3 days that it takes between when you put that in the Dropbox or the Kinko's,
whatever it is,
and when you update your web browser and see it has arrived at competition.
Because it may not.
And even if it does, then you got to like look at the competition website and make sure that it has been received intact and that the 3 bottles you sent that they requested all got there fine.
Yeah. And you know, plus the fact, many companies, you cannot send alcohol as a amateur.
Right. So
through the U.S. Postal Service.
The U.S. Postal Service is absolutely illegal to send alcohol.
And we don't recommend it. Don't do it.
Don't do that.
Because at best, you're going to have it thrown away, and at worst, they're going to charge you.
Don't go to jail for your hobby.
No, this is not worth it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is our meat of the day.
Not to completely take this in a different direction, but yeah, we've gotten started, and we don't have anything in our glasses.
Yeah, that's a horrible thing.
That's a problem. It's a homebrew show. We've got to have some homebrew. This is actually from Valkyrie's Horn. This was a commemorative gift that we got from the fine folks there. This is by Jeremy Olson. It's a Puna Punch Mead, which I believe was a, this is like a fruit and spice blend from Sean Harris out in Hawaii.
And he tells me that Sean Harris is awesome. I love him. But they tell me this guy, this is the least complicated name. Or is that, no, it's not this one. No, this drink is amazing. It smells.
Yeah. And this is made with lemon blossom honey. It's a 9% ABV. Looks like it's carbonated or petalum. It smells nice. It's a light. Yeah, there's a little citrus on there.
Yeah, a little citrus. Oh, I get it. I'm not getting floral. Oh, it's strong.
Mm-hmm.
It dances across the tongue with the spice.
The carbonation also helps. There's some bitter bitey parts to it that are interesting. It has a little bit of herbal bitterness that is...
I'm okay. This is not among my favorites. It's not bad. Don't mind you. If you handed this to me, I would drink it, but I would not reach for it myself.
That's fair. Yeah. It's not one of, it's not my absolute favorite. I like that there is interesting stuff going on here. It has some complexity to it that is good. It's not a one note thing of, oh yeah, this is honey and raspberries.
Yeah. No, there's a lot going on there. There's a whole lot going on there. And again, it's kind of bad, but it's okay. I like the mix of flavors together as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
This is more like it has a hammer with each flavor. I'm giving it on my tongue.
Well, and I'm as without getting too into the weeds of judging stuff here too, I'm having trouble separating those flavors. There's an herbal bitterness that I don't really put my finger on. There's some fruitiness. There's the lemon blossom honey that I
I
really
really
like.
like that.
That lemon blossom is nice, and I have some of that sitting 10 feet behind me here that just needs to get put into a sous vide so it can get liquid again and I can make it into a mead.
Speaking of which, I'm about to start a caramel apple mead pretty quick here. And it's gonna be I'm gonna toast the honey. What do you call it again?
Vacher style.
Bochet style, thank you.
Yes.
I mean, I know what I'm trying to do. I don't know the words of how I'm trying to do it. So, bocheting honey is basically you're re reducing the level of water in the honey by slow cooking it.
And that allows it to toast. It'll caramelize the honey the same way you're making caramel with sugar. But yeah, the process of doing that, you are removing the amount of water from the honey to create that caramelization
Like
effect.
making more toffee-like or caramel-like.
Exactly. Yeah, you the reason of what I like to do when I'm doing that is using a slow cooker, and I say low and slow. You still use the high instead of the low because
I found that that's about 206 degrees, roughly, on most slow cookers.
it wouldn't surprise me. If you do it on low, you will take literally 14 hours.
Okay.
That's real low and slow.
I don't know.
High temperature, from my experience, has taken 4 to 5 hours, which is plenty slow for me.
And if you put it on the stove and you have a higher temperature, you have to stir it constantly, or you're going to burn it.
You have to stir it constantly. You really have to watch for boil over, and you have to be able to control that if it gets to boil over. I don't know how you do that very well, other than not do it in the first place.
Yeah, and the reason that you have boil over is because the water going to steam is trying to get out of the thick honey,
Right.
and it gets thicker and thicker, and it's going to push the honey up, and you're going to boil over, and it's a mess. You don't want to clean it up; it's horrible.
It can
Slow cooker.
potentially like quadruple in volume. The people I've seen boil it, the smartest way that I've pe seen people like raw boil it, they did it on a campfire. So they had no cleanup if it needed,
Yeah,
if
you
they
just kind
didn't
of
need
throw
to
the pot
boil
out
it.
and you're done.
Yeah, exactly. So that's one way to do it. But I like the slow cooker method. I like to take my time with it, and
It doesn't boil over.
right. You don't have to deal with boiling over, and if you take your time with it, if you watch it, you can kind of go through, like, I don't know if you're familiar with the candy making stages, like hard crack, soft crack. You get those, you get something similar to that with the honey,
Okay.
where like usually where I take my honey when I'm doing a Bochet style mead, I will take it to a kind of a mahogany dark color, not exactly black, but pretty dark, because I want some of those roasty toasty notes. The process of doing that, you're getting some of those sugars converted into non-fermentable sugars, because sugar, like anything else organic, is the structure of proteins and other chemicals. And some of those, the heat from that will fold those in ways that yeast look at and go, oh, what the hell do I do with this?
Okay. Now here's my question. You mentioned sous-vide. Can you do a brochet with a sous-vide?
I don't see why not.
They get up to 100, 212 degrees, the one I have at home. It goes up to 212.
So I think the bare of it is, the challenge of it is that part of the caramelizing process that I have always been aware of is that it takes a lot longer to reach that caramelization if you do like the slow cooker method with the lid on as opposed to the lid off, because that the water vapor will collect on the lid and drip back down. It just seems to take longer to get the caramelization that I'm looking for if you can't vent out that water vapor. If you're doing sous vide, you can't vent out the water vapor at all. It might be possible. It might not. I'm not sure. I think you should try it, and I think you should report back on the podcast.
Will do. Will do. Now, you also mentioned when I brought this up another time, we said we're going to answer it here, but you also mentioned why don't you do a half crochet? What is that?
Half bouchée is not the best way to put it. You can use a portion of your honey as bouchéed. You can use a portion as like raw or varietal or
Okay,
something like
gotcha.
that. So let's say, as we've talked about before, I don't like to use, X number of pounds to do a thing because I find that inaccurate. I would rather go by
The reading.
a ratio. Yeah. But we could say, for example, if we're expecting to need about 10 pounds of honey for a particular recipe, well, 3 to 5 of that could be bouchéed honey. Another 3 to 5 could be wildflower, basic Costco stuff. And then we could throw in another 1/2 pound of maybe some nice mesquite honey as a finishing kind of back sweetening thing to give it a little bit of weird spice and
Okay.
stuff like that at the
Okay.
end.
Well, that was my big question because let me start that hopefully within the week. well, the stars aligned in the correct pattern for me, you know, that type of thing. Just,
Free time and
yeah.
ingredients and a lack of distraction.
Yeah. What that last part? That last part is a problem. Yeah, I got, yeah.
Preach.
Yeah, but anyway, back to what we're okay. We got our meat of the day, and you know, it's good. Don't get me wrong. Our meat of the day is good. It's just it's more of a hammer than a enhancement to me. It's good, but it's really heavy on the spice flavor, and it's the bitter from the herb is really not what I like as well. All right, now your competitions. Competitions are if you're an entrant. Competitions are kind of boring overall. You're going to send in. Most of them say they want like 2 12-ounce bottles
2 to 3. Yep.
2 to 3 12-ounce bottles of whatever you're entering per entry. You'll pay by entry, whatever that fee happens to be,
Right.
and that you have to get it to them somehow. Now, getting to them if it's out of state or a long ways away or something, this is a problem. Most couriers, FedEx,
UPS.
UPS, whatever, their policy is no.
Right.
As a general rule, they say, no, we're not going to transport that for you.
Unless you are a tax-paying alcohol producer and you have a registered business with the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearm, or whatever TTB agency that the federal you're doing it by the law. You can ship if you're a legal entity. You are a home brewer.
You're a home brewer. You're not any of that.
You count.
And therefore, this is where your problem starts. It's illegal to put it through the U.S. Postal Service, and it's against policy for everyone else for the most part. Here's where your local competition people can be your best friend. It is not unheard of to have a person in that group that's local say, I'm going to go to that competition. Give me all of your stuff, pay your fees. I will pile it into my car and I will drive.
I'm going to be in Minneapolis this weekend for Valkyrie's Horn, for example. Why not also bring your entries with me? Because I'm going to have car space. It saves you what will end up being probably $40 to $50 in shipping
Easy.
through FedEx easily. It saves you ridiculous packaging, which we can talk about the ways you should package if you don't have the fortune of having an acquaintance that's going to the competition anyway.
If you go to the online general store that everybody knows about, it can cost $25, $30, $40 to pick, package 2 to 3 bottles.
Yeah, there's
That's just for the packing material. Forget the postage.
No, I at one point when I was interested in participating in competitions a lot, I had a stack of what is it, 12 by 12 square boxes and some bubble wrap, not to mention an entire thing of just the gallon size Ziploc bags. And bigger, what is it, maybe 6 mil plastic bags. But yeah, no,
It's hard. It's expensive.
it's expensive,
And this
it's
is a
time
hobby,
consuming.
guys.
Yeah, that said, I mean, getting feedback from these competitions is so valuable. We try to provide good feedback as judges. We hope that you use the feedback. We enjoy trying things as judges that you've created, because they're, again, this is so many different people contributing so many different things.
And it adds to our list.
Right. But yeah, no, it is kind of a pain to get them there. And
You know,
there are better ways to do it than FedEx and less
and
expensive
you know,
ones.
what we're trying to say is support your local group
Yeah.
because you know they can be your best friend and this can help you out a lot and make it even possible.
Right. Look. Check out the American Homebrew Association website. They have lists of these competitions, whether it's the big mead-specific competitions or just your local regional competition. They have lists of your homebrew clubs local to you, so you can find other people that are interested in mead. And honestly, guys, if you have to, if you have to sample some beer or cider or wine too to get advice on your mead and just have mead with people,
Are you hurting that bad?
is it that bad?
Is that bad?
Yeah,
It's, you know,
no, it's
sounds like a win-win here,
life
guys.
is good with homebrew, guys. Yeah, so get involved with your local homebrew competitions or clubs, and totally. You may get more specific feedback from people that are a little bit more familiar with mead from the mead specific competitions, but that should not discourage you from getting into your local homebrew competitions that are easier to get involved with either. And the honestly, participating as a judge or a steward in one of your local homebrew clubs competitions, also a lot of fun. You get to try stuff that people near you are making, or people in cities associated to you. I've done a little bit of judging for Missouri Mashers annual competition a time or two, and I mean, they appreciated it because they didn't have a lot of guys that were mead judge specific and had a lot of input there. I appreciated it because I got to try some not to go off on an entire tangent here,
But we will.
but as a judge, one of my favorite times, I cannot for the life of me remember the name of the style off the top of my head, but there is a specific style of German beer that uses like it's like sea salt or something
Really?
in the ingredients list. It's not one of my favorites. I don't tend to like it. It's like a like and the bear in mind, this is like 5 or 6 years ago this happened to me that I had this type. It was kind of sour. It had a sea salt sea salt component to it. I will probably look it up and put it in the show notes because this is bothering me now.
Okay.
But this particular style of beer, not fond of. I've had one from I think Dogfish Head that was okay. Don't really jive on that. But it was so good that this guy in this beer category that I'm not particularly experienced with, but I was judging with on with another guy, and I was like, oh my God, this you're hitting all of the points for this style of beer. The beer is delightful. It's bright. It's sharp. It's so good. This is our first place for this competition. And like, I don't like this style of beer, but this was so good. It's the kind of thing you get to experience at
Man,
a.
when you said this is going to be the first place finisher for this competition, were you done with tasting for that competition at that point?
Not for that competition, for the category.
For the category, were you done fake tasting for that category?
Yes. Well,
But
so
you knew at the end when you finally tasted.
yeah. No, this was in small competitions. Like an entire category is maybe 8 beers,
Okay.
and so you get a flight of. Three and three, or four and three, or whatever. So after you've had 8 beers, you can kind of tell the entire category
Yeah.
is going to be made up of what you've tasted. And this one, far and away, was like,
So good.
right. The second place was not close.
Okay. Right.
And it's a kind of beer I hated, but oh my God. And yeah, no, that was one of those things where like I don't like this kind of beer, but this beer was so good.
And yeah, and which is the reason we like doing this. I mean, like I said, I've had a avocado mead that was I please. Pour this down the sink. I'm really offended by you. The fact you gave this to me. I thought you liked me better than this, to one that was absolutely delightful. Same ingredient.
I like avocados. Why did you do this to
Yeah.
the avocados?
Do you hate avocados? Oh, anyway. But so what competition is like? Competitions, if you go, is a lot of moving parts and not a lot of flash, to be honest.
Now, when you say if you go, I want to be clear that this is not something like there are no bleachers where you can just sit and watch. If
It's
you
more
go
boring than golf.
to a competition, we're talking about volunteer. You, which is not to say you shouldn't. And honestly, like
You should.
cellar staff, stewards, and just basically like help around organizing and moving stuff around. There are so many moving parts in this. Every competition I've ever been a part of has been eternally grateful for anybody that's willing to jump in and lend a hand. And like I jump in and do cellar work like I did at Valkyrie's Horn, or just moving stuff around and helping whatever I can, wherever I can, because I know it's so much work and it takes so many people doing so much stuff. Yeah, but they try
Is it
to,
worth it? Absolutely.
yes, the expression of gratitude for that effort strong every
Yes.
time. You get to try all kinds of these things like Chris was talking about.
If they allow it.
You get, little commemorative bottles you get to bring home. You also generally get like little swag and prizes. They have t-shirts or beer glasses. I've gotten
Coasters, glasses.
8 ounces of Star Sand, and we've talked about how that lasts a
Yeah,
year,
about.
right? Yeah.
But for a competition like as an entrant, it's not much to it, to be honest. What you can do is you're going to bottle your entry and do 2 to 3 bottles, 12 ounces of each, of preferably a amber or dark brown bottle of some kind. And the reason they're trying to protect it from sunlight and all these other things and make everything uniform and consistent so nothing stands out
Right.
in the bottle.
Or on the table for that matter. But they tell you specifically don't have your fancy labels on it. You want it to look as uniform and nondescript as possible so that if the judge, if I am a famous mead judge and my buddy Chris always does like a lavender bottle cap with a gold seal on the neck of the bottle, and I see at competition a little gold seal on the neck of the bottle
With a lavender
sitting
top.
right with a lavender top next to it, I got a pretty good idea that that's Chris's bottle before I even taste it.
And you don't want that.
No.
This is literally about the taste. How does it, you don't want to be identifiable at all. And this works for your advantage. This is, you're getting your information to make what you're doing better. Ride this wave, man, because they're doing this not to not make you stand out. If your meat is good, it'll stand out just fine. I mean, let me tell you about my meat experience. When I entered my one and only contest I did, I entered my blackberry vanilla into the contest, and I put it in the wrong category. Now, Jeff will tell you what that means is you're not going to get judged. You'll get judged, but you will not be eligible for any medals or category award.
They will still be honest. They will still tell you what they liked, what they didn't like, and how you can improve. That is the nature of judging.
They will judge it, but you're ineligible for any award. And I was always good with that because I was judged by three judges. One guy says, well, it tastes like your vanilla was from it was artificial vanilla, which shocked me because I make my own vanilla from vanilla beans, in which I'm sitting here, okay, I guess, I don't know why it made that flavor to him. The other two could not say enough good things about it. They thought this was phenomenal. Please put this in the right category. I mean, one guy on the note said, please put in correct category next.
Yeah.
And they liked it. None of them disliked it. One guy thought the vanilla was artificial. That was all I had to say about it.
And look, if you're entering competitions just to win medals, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I've kind of lost interest in that myself. I've talked about this before. But if you're just entering competition to win medals, you're entering a lot of competitions. Because, like, I have had the experience where the same mead that I was very proud of at one competition took home the Mazer or whatever second place in category, and literally like a month later it got a score so low they would have had to go to the judges and be like, hey,
can I make it lower,
right? can I go under the technical minimum here? I know this is homebrew, it's not like these guys are these are commercials, but yeah, no, that it's
humbling. It'll get you. But, you know, and, you know, your reasons for going to competition are your reasons. If you want medals, go for medals. If you don't, don't. I went because I was encouraged to.
Right. And what I was trying to get at there is that, like it or not, judges have a subjective interpretation of your mead because they have a subjective interpretation of your mead. I am judging your mead when I'm judging your mead in context and in the basis of, like, how it's presented to me and how it's been sitting. For all I know, within the month between, you know, getting that cup and getting that kick in the balls low score, my bottles might have been sat in a garage in like 95 degree heat and gone completely turned so that it wasn't the same meat.
And you know, that can happen.
Yeah. I don't want to make excuses. That judge might have just tasted something that they didn't like. That's fine too.
I mentioned thick skin earlier. You've got to have a little bit of thick skin to do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
You're putting yourself out there. You know, take the information you get back as, this is what I need to improve on every time.
Judging is such a weird thing because there are so many combinations of little sensory bits, like the cilantro thing is my example here. I am one of that, I think it's 22% of the population that tastes soap, not cilantro.
I am not a member of that club. I like cilantro.
Yeah, my wife loves to give me shit about that. I am the whitest of white people, according to her, because I can't enjoy cilantro in my salsa. But yeah, no, some people have an easy perception of different little flavor combinations, and some people are very sensitive to others. I know I was talking to, speaking of homebrew stores that have closed, Jennifer that used to run Grain and Glass here in Kansas City, she was the one that initially designed the quality assurance team at Boulevard Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. And she basically just for the longest time was pulling people off of the beer lines, like the bottling lines and things like that. And it's like, here, try this to find out who were the people that were sensitive to these weird little off flavor components. And to see if they could find them so that she could get a sample team going.
Wow.
And, just to make sure that that little percentage of the population that tastes this weird chemical that to them tastes like baby vomit, that they can find that in the beer and make sure that that doesn't go out to the public.
That's a visual. Anyway, yeah. But anyway, so you're in a contest. You're sitting in X number of samples, two to three bottles of whatever one you're going to do. You send as many entries as you want up to whatever limit they set.
Right.
You know, usually there's a limit to how many you can send in. You can't have 20 in because that's not fair.
Right. I think Mazer Cup, any of the years I participated, they had a hard limit of 10, for example, because they, guys, we can only drink so much alcohol before we're just silly.
Yeah. And yeah, it gets pretty silly pretty quick. But then after you see, after you get those bottles to them, you're done.
Yeah.
It's now from when the deadline of you when you put it into the competition, which could be anywhere from 1 to 3 to 4 months after you they won it.
Yeah. If you're lucky, bigger competitions like Mazer Cup and Valkyrie's Horn will do like a simulcast award ceremony where they you know have a video that they're sending out on the internet or YouTube or whatever or Facebook to tell you how you're doing for the longest time. Even Mazer Cup, like when I was sending entries in, I was on Twitter refreshing Matt Whitey's page because Matt used to screenshot the little pages of their awards to broadcast that to the internet. And that was how I was figuring out as fast as I could who won. Otherwise, you're just refreshing the competition entry page until you've got a score.
Which is exactly what I did.
Yeah.
It was the JBCP competition here in KC. Yeah,
Okay.
I think it was. And it was where I sent it. And it was like 3 months after I sent it in, they judged. So I'm sitting on my heels. I'm living my life. I'm doing the best I can. What could I have done better? And you stress over it because that's human nature. But then I looked up on the site and it wasn't there the next day. And I looked up on the site the next day after that, it wasn't there. I looked up the day after that. The competition's over at this point. Looked up the next day after that, looked up the next day after that, and there it was. And I got all the feedback I got, and I was very happy with what I got. But that is all you get. You don't get your bottles back. What you sent, you lose. And
Right.
you've donated. And if you win, fantastic. If you don't, the worst you're gonna get is information on how to make it better. Worst you're gonna get. And do I recommend it? Absolutely. Get professional advice. It's worth every bit of it. Now, I mentioned earlier that when I sent mine in, I put it in the wrong category. Now, mine is a blackberry vanilla mead. I sent it in under the berry category
Because it's a blackberry meat.
because the
Makes
blackberry
sense.
mead. I didn't think twice about the vanilla part. So we're gonna go through. Now, it's very important you put it in the correct category because if you, like I say, if you don't get in the correct category, they'll judge it. They won't let you can't award it, get an award for it if it's that good. We're gonna go through that. So this is the CP categories, and we're going to go through them, and Jeff's going to explain what that is. First category is dry.
So these first three categories are all traditional meads or show meads. There's a number of different terms we use here, but they all kind of fit into the this is honey, water, and yeast.
Period. Nothing else. It's called a traditional or a trad. I mean, it's just a
Show
trivia.
meads. Yeah, there's a bunch of, like I said, different terms. And these are broken up by sweetness level. Dry meads have very little residual sugar left to them, or enough that it balances some of the traits of the honey without being sweet on the tongue, so to speak. And if you look at the BJCP guidelines, they have great like little breakdowns as to what we expect for like final gravity and things like that. Those aren't hard and fast rules. We're not When I judge your mead at a competition, I'm not putting it into a sample beaker and taking a gravity reading. I do not have a hydrometer or a refractometer with me. I just don't. I don't have the time. I don't
It's
have the
all about
patience.
taste.
Yeah, I'm there to judge flavor and presentation. I get a little glass and I probably don't finish that glass. Sorry.
Because that would just be a lot in the course of your day. The next one is, of course, semi-sweet.
Right. And these are, this is kind of that borderline. There's a middle part where the semi-sweet can mean a lot of different things. That's the weird, wild one where I have had some meads that were bone dry in terms of residual sugar, but they had enough perception of sweetness that I would not call it dry. I would call it semi-sweet.
Let's be fair here. The next category is sweet, where you have a very su
Right.
palatable sweet flavor, and some sweets everywhere in between.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there are some sweet meads that there is a particular style of mead that you hear it derisively called like sweet tart mead. Sometimes people say that derisively. Sometimes people say that affectionately. Sweet tart meads are very acidic, but also very sweet. And there is a big chunk of the mead drinking world that likes those meads a lot. And this is where you get like the Kurt Stock style fruit bombs that he is well known for,
And
too.
there, I found there's also one called sour meat out there.
Oh yeah, no, that's
We'll get that later, but
yeah.
I've
Well,
seen that.
that's totally a thing.
And now sweet is, a high sugar content.
Yes, that's right. That's higher sugar. That's that can be that doesn't necessarily need mean to be cloyingly sweet. I think the dividing line between semi-sweet and sweet is more fuzzy than between semi-sweet and dry, for example.
Okay. Now, next one is called a sizer.
Yes. So now we're getting into the fruit meats. Sizer is a combination of apple, juice or fruit. It's an apple-based meat. But
Is that just an apple-based meat, or can it be another kind of fruit juice?
always apple.
Okay.
Sizer is only apple. It is a fruit mead that is only apple, that whether you're using the actual fruit that's been like sliced up, I don't know why you do that. There's not a lot of sugar or like flesh into that, but I guess if you're looking for the peel flavor and stuff like that, you could. I've seen people do that. I just don't understand it. The way that I approach a sizer is to get cider, like the pressed cider. And like you go to Lewisburg,
I,
they'll
that's
do,
where I get my cider
yeah,
from.
they'll pull it right off the press line. You just pour it into the thing. It's kind of brown, it's opaque, it's the way cider is supposed to be. And like,
It's thick as all get out because there's actually pulp in there.
oh yeah, you don't need to add yeast to it technically, because it is already right from the tree as God intended it. Like, apples want to ferment. They're just waiting for the opportunity. No, apples, I have put apple cider into my fridge with the intention of I'll get to that next week, and it's already fermenting by the time I get it out. It's Yeah, moving on,
Moving
moving
on.
on.
Okay, next one is Pyment.
Piment is a wonderful little hybrid between mead and wine. Piment is a grape-based must, or a grape-included must.
Okay, so
So,
instead of the apple for a sizer, you have a grape base.
right. Generally, we're talking about like pressed grapes that you would use to make wine, including honey into that. So, whether you're using like a red wine base or a white wine base, there you can.
Doesn't matter what kind of grape, or it just has to be grape in general.
The grapes intended for making wine
So you
are
could
the
do like
ones that are.
champagne grapes or
Yeah.
dark grapes or cotton candy grapes or whatever grape.
Well, cotton candy grapes are generally for eating, not for winemaking.
It was just an example.
You could totally use those, I'm sure. I'm just not sure you'd get an appetizing result from it because they are made for eating, not for winemaking. Generally, as I understand it, the one time that I harvested grapes for making wine, I did not have the wherewithal to go, I should put one of these in my mouth and taste it.
Okay.
But as I am given to understand it, the grapes for making wine are not edible or enjoyable to eat as much as they are the end result. Kind of like the apples you use to make hard cider, they call those like bitter sharps. They tend to be, as the name implies, very bitter, very acidic. They don't taste good. They're not like table apples, but when
When you slider them, they're good.
you let them sit and let them ferment, you get some tasty, tasty booze.
Okay, I didn't know that. That's
Yeah.
good evolution. I like that.
So that's my understanding. I could be wrong. I probably am wrong because,
If we're wrong, let us know.
yeah,
I mean,
give
heavens, we're learning every day about this too. Like I said, like I said a couple of weeks ago, I've added several books to my library that I'm trying to read now. And we're going to go over books and resources in future events, future episodes. But if we're
Yeah.
wrong, let us know. Give you help us out too.
For sure. Yeah. And let's keep moving.
Okay, so now we have a berry, which is what I had for my blackberry.
Right. You would think, and berries are a cal or a weird category of fruit because it kind of goes all over the place. You've got the little like blackberries and raspberries, you've got strawberries. If it's a berry, it belongs here. Easy enough. This is common parlance, this is common perception. We're not going to get into botanical
Okay, yeah.
stuff.
But if it has berry in the name, it probably counts.
It probably counts.
Okay.
Also, if it's like, yeah, aronia or little berry-shaped fruits, that's probably right.
Elderberry
Yeah,
or okay, yeah, it's okay.
it's right.
Cranberry. Okay. Stone fruit. Now this is like there's it has one solid big seed in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. So this includes, obviously, peaches, like we just had last week. This is plums, apricots,
Cherries.
cherries. Sure. You know what else this includes that surprised me? But then I went, oh, well, of course, mango.
Yeah, I suppose that would be,
Yeah.
yeah. Okay,
Oh, yeah.
yeah, that's okay. I would
Yeah.
not have categorized like that.
It has a stone. It's there. I sat down to judge stone fruits a couple years back with Steve Piatt, who wrote the other book on mead making other than Ken Tram, and also, incidentally, wrote the BJCP guidelines for judging mead.
Ooh.
So he would know, right?
Yeah, you may be an authority on this one, yeah.
And went, oh, we've got mango meads. Is that uncategorized? He's like, no, mango has a stone. You're right. Yeah, I guess it does. It's been so long since I've had mango that I ate, from
I
with.
cut myself.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if I get mango, it's usually dried or else like candied or
Juice.
something. Right. Yeah, juice mango. God, it's work to get some of these fruits like fruit food.
Number one fruit in the world. We don't know anything
Yeah,
about it.
exactly. And so, like, the last category in this whole fruit mead umbrella that we're getting to is melomel.
Melomel, yeah, it's the next category.
Melomel is. It's the catch-all, and it's kind of the umbrella to which everything else applies if it doesn't fit in Sizer or Pymet or Barry or Stoneford. And this is also the mix of stuff. So if we have a cherry and raspberry mead, cherries are not.
They're stone fruits.
Yeah, cherries are Stonefruits, raspberries are berries.
Yes.
We don't put in one or the other. That's a melomel.
Okay. So
So.
this is just if you're making something outside the other categories, it's a melomel.
Right. If you're making a fruit mead that is multiple categories or is kind of hard to define, melomel is a real safe place to put it. This is a case of like the rectangles and squares things, where all squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares.
Okay, fair. Fair.
All meads with fruit in it are melomels, whether it's a sizer or a berry or a stone or whatever.
It has to have a fruit, but it can be anything else too.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, now I've got spiced in that same category.
Well, now we're moving into a different, like,
This is a different category.
different overt category. Yeah. Spiced meads are meads that include what we typically think of culinarily as spices, herbs, spices. Those names culinarily are a little weird, but generally, like roots and leaves and flowers that don't contribute sugar per se, but contribute flavor,
Okay.
is generally how I
Thyme,
conceptualize
rosemary,
this. Yeah.
cinnamon,
Exactly. Cinnamon's a
nutmeg.
popular one. Nutmeg is a popular one. Vanilla, if vanilla is by itself, is, yeah, that's just a spice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
And
I made a
so.
vanilla mead, that would be that. No. What would it, okay, for example, I heard one came out recently by my attention. It was a marshmallow vanilla. What would it be categorized as?
Probably spice.
Okay. I mean,
Marshmallow is a spice. Vanilla is a spice. Assuming we're talking about like marshmallow leaf and not like the flavor of marshmallows, which has nothing to do with the spice marshmallow anymore, and has not, as far as I remember from Alton Brown telling me 10, 20 years ago, has not had anything to do with the spice of vanilla since like almost ancient Egypt.
Okay, good to know. But
Yeah.
you have to use the marshmallow spice or flavoring, I mean, where it came from, the mallow plant.
Right. If we're talking about a spice from the marshmallow plant, and we're talking about vanilla, which is another spice.
It's spiced.
Spice. Yeah.
Okay. But if it's like marshmallows, like you get in the store for s'mores, what would you call that?
We'll get to that later.
Okay,
But
fair.
that's going to be one of the last
Okay, fair. Now the next one is fruit and spice.
Fruit and spice.
Would have been my blackberry vanilla.
That's where your blackberry vanilla should have been, because you had fruit
And spice.
and a spice.
Okay.
And there are so many combinations. This is a relatively new one as far as I have seen with the BJCP. This didn't always used to be a thing. This used to kind of get slotted into experimental by right, I think, or by
Default.
process of elimination.
Okay.
Because, I mean, think about it, a fruit and a spice, they do taste nice together. There are so many different varieties, like,
Spiced pepper
yeah, exactly.
is a
They're
wonderful thing.
that it just makes sense in the way that we consume, fruit and spices in general, and so many people take inspiration for making their meat styles based on foods we eat, right? So,
So a fruit
yeah.
cocktail wouldn't be out of the question.
Sure.
Okay. I'm not saying good or bad. I'm saying
Yeah.
you jump to mind. Okay. Next category is spice, herb, or vegetable,
Right.
which I actually got into a fun, just I was poking the bear at Valkyrie Horn with the owners and judges with avocado. Avocado is considered, as far as a meat competition, it is considered a vegetable. And they would say, well, culinarily it's a vegetable. Culinarily it's a fruit. They're sitting here, it's a vegetable. And I said, okay, I'm just, you're game, So what other vegetables would you find in meads, for example?
So, the spice, herb, and vegetable is a little bit more of a fuzzy category. This one, I want to go back to what BJCP has to say about it specifically, but this generally is like a spice or an herb, so back to spiced, and vegetables like that could be considered spices, but are not. Again, this is technically. It technically is used a lot in this definition. These are some of the examples they give here at the very end that I like are including roses, rose hips, ginger, rhubarb, pumpkins, chili peppers, coffee, chocolate, nuts, including coconut,
Really?
including coconut,
Okay.
citrus peels and zest, teas. Tea beets are very nice too. Those can be very fun. Excluding those used strictly for tannin levels, not for adding flavor. And that's another thing we'll need to talk about once we get through the last of these categories
Okay.
is perception. Anyway, that one is a little bit fuzzy, and then we're moving on to the final major category.
It'd be bragging.
They call this the specialty category.
Okay.
That includes braggots, that includes historicals. Braggot is And if any of you guys have listened to our previous episodes with me and JD and Ryan moving back and forth, you know we talked a lot about braggots. Braggots are a lot of fun. There is so much you can do with them. We did competitions about them, right, left, and center. We have talked braggots on this show.
Define a braggot.
A braggot is a mixture of a mead and a beer. Or let's put it this way, the fermentable sugars are a combination of a malted grain that you would get in a beer and a honey.
Okay.
And those two factors contribute to the overall mix. There are some people online that will say, hey, no, it has to be at least 51% honey for it to be a braggot. Otherwise, it's a honey beer. And yes, if you're a commercial brewer operating in the United States and you're trying to frame it that way, yeah, I think there are rules and laws in this country and in other countries potentially that say, if it's X amount of grain and Y amount of honey, then it falls into this category. Otherwise, it's this category.
But we're amateurs.
We're amateurs.
We're
I mean,
amateurs
we
here.
make our own rules.
Absolutely,
And I
because
think if it's any
how
combination,
freeing.
if it's any combination of the two, it's a braggot.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, now next category I see here is historical. Is that the one you're looking at?
Yes. So historical, and this is one of the cool things about mead that I really like about mead. If you think about the categories of beer, the established styles of beer,
Which
generally
are plentiful.
so many.
Yeah.
But you think about those are generally associated with like a region or a major city in more often than not Germany.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah, they're good at it, you know.
Germany,
Hops.
Belgium, and like Flanders or the Netherlands, they have the bulk of those. You get some in, the surrounding regions, but those ones that we think about as in terms of like historical styles at least. And then we get into, New World styles over here and in New Zealand and stuff like that. But those are all kind of outgrowths of each other. Mead as a style doesn't have that kind of historical.
Geography.
Well, yes, no, it doesn't have as much historical weight to it.
Okay.
We're kind of rediscovering mead right now. Mead doesn't have that kind of hangover effect where this is the way we've done it, this is the way we've always done it, so we're going to do it this way in this region and that
So
way in
it
another
was
region.
kind of a lost art for a little bit,
Right.
and
There
it was
are.
enough of it left to rebuild.
There are some parts of the world that have their own, like historically preserved and continued styles. Polish mead, for example, the one that you generally always hear about. They've been doing it the same way for, what, a few centuries now, I think.
Okay.
It's a long-standing tradition. Ethiopian tej as another well, I don't know if it's necessarily historical, but it's a traditional style that is continued. There are a number of those. Historical beads are in that same kind of vein, but they also include things like, the cabinet of Kenneth Digby or something like that
Okay.
is one of the oldest published known has one of the oldest published known mead recipes within mead books or within cookbooks or like cuisine guides and things like
So,
that.
yeah, I'm seeing up in the future episode, maybe we'll be talking about reference books that you can look into for ideas and recipes and those sort of
Yeah,
things.
well, this so I have there's a couple of historical meads that I want to try, but there are also some that are like really I have back and forth as to whether I want to try them.
I've read a few that I'm not going to try simply because I don't drink beer for a personal reason because I'm allergic to hops. I have an adverse reaction to hops, so I'm
Yeah.
not going to drink beer. And
Why
in
would you?
America, if it's not, it doesn't have hops, it's not a beer. That by legal definition. So, I know there are beers without hops, and I'll try those. But a lot of ancient recipes I've read in the recent past have hops in their mead, in which I'll never try that, but it's still interesting to look at.
No, there's one kind of historical recipe that I think it was Laura Angiotti that we talked about years and years ago with when she was doing historical mead research. She told me about like a I think it was a Salzburg mead. It basically the idea is that it's equal parts hops and sage.
That's interesting. That's very earthy.
And I assume since it's like a few hundred years old and German, it's probably something along the lines of a noble hop, which is more of the floral variety, right?
Yeah.
That seemed pretty approachable, pretty that's the kind of historical I could see myself interested in, and I've got an idea for a takeoff of that that could be really fun.
Yeah.
We might try and play with that at some point. We might not. It the again, the list. The
Yeah,
list
the
is
list
long.
is huge.
There is much.
Yes.
So that's the historical. Experimental is kind of that last possible category if
Catch
nothing
all.
else fits. Exactly. You
Mm-hmm.
know, we talked about how melomels are where if it's fruit, but it's different kinds of fruit, or it's a different fruit, you're not sure. Melomel's a safe bet for that. Experimental is kind of like,
Everything else.
yeah, it's where it's this is the thing and the thing and the thing, and it doesn't fit here and it's not quite there. It goes in experimental.
Okay, so
And
that's the last category is experimental.
experimental can be a busy category,
Yeah,
like it or not.
and I actually know I've experimented with every single one I've ever done, so
Well,
I know it has its own category, but I've experimented with all of them.
explicitly experimental is about, yeah,
If
no, it doesn't
you want to
really.
put walnuts and a coconut in there, it's probably experimental.
No, that's fruit, spice, and vegetable. We just talked about how
Oh
nuts
my
fit in there.
gosh. You have to be
Gross.
really, really creative to be experimental then, huh?
You have to be out there. Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't even jump in that category by, raw chance.
Another good example of something that I would consider experimental but not necessarily weird, though, is, for example, if you take oak beans or spirals or whatever, and you soak those in like rye whiskey or rum or a very particular flavor, bourbon, something like that
Sherry.
has, yeah, something that has a particular alcoholic flavor, so that that alcoholic flavor, not just the slight oak, is imparted to the mead. Then you've got, it's not an alcohol enhanced mead per se, but it has that flavor of it.
It's not
That's
fortified, but
exactly. It's not the fortified mead, but it has a flavor of that alcohol. That to me is very cleanly an experimental mead.
ultimately it comes in the fact that I don't know where else to put this, so it's an experimental.
More often than not, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right, now you mentioned that the process, the perception of at one point, what you expound.
Sure. So let's say, for example, that I have a that I make a mead with strawberries and raspberries and apricots.
Okay.
And I put those together. I go through months of making this brew and bottling it. And when all is said and done, I taste strawberries and raspberries. Not really the apricot. The apricot's kind of, it's just not that strong. It's hard to taste at all. What category should I put that in?
Okay. Shouldn't you categorize about what you actually put into it? Rather you, I mean, if when you fill out the form, you can't just omit the apricot, can you?
Yes, you can. In fact, you probably should. Now, this is the kind of thing where it's really helpful to be a member of a homebrew club or to have other people that are interested in this to taste this for you. Or at least, have a wife you can say, here, honey, have a glass. Can you taste apricot in this? Get some other people's opinion. But if you can't taste apricot, and you tell me it's an apricot mead, I'm going to count you off for not tasting apricot. It will be to your
Advantage to not mention it at all.
right. It will be counted against you if you tell me there is apricot in something and I don't taste apricot in it.
Okay, fair enough.
So in this case, if I have, and this is all example, this is not something I've made. I'm just pulling this off the top of my head. But if I have a strawberry and raspberry and apricot mead and I don't taste apricot in it, I'm entering it as a berry mead.
It's a strawberry raspberry meat.
Right.
Okay.
I'm not mentioning apricot at all.
Okay, fair. And yeah, that may seem like a little bit like gaming the system, but if you don't taste it anyway, what's the problem?
Let me judge you based on what you taste and what I taste.
Yeah, fair enough.
If you tell
Okay.
me something's in there and I don't taste it, you did something wrong.
So being a part of a competition is fun. Entering into a competition is easy.
Getting the meats there can be problematic.
Except for the problem of, making sure they get what you sent.
Right.
We've already talked about that part. That was kind of a, there ought to be a thing. And slam my fist on the table a few times about that. There's something you should be able to do something now, whatever. But and now we know the categories of meat. What are we looking at for we're going to do in the future?
So, join us next week. I'm going to take you through my process in judging a mead. Chris is going to pour me some glasses. We'll probably do something very basic like, hey, Jeff, this is a X percent ABV mead made with blueberries. And I'm going to just go through the checklist, judge it, and tell you how somebody judging your mead at a competition would do the thing.
Okay.
And I hope that is enlightening for those of you that don't already do this, but are interested in it.
And if you don't want to ever, if you just want to make it for the joy of it, make it for the joy of it. This
Yeah.
can't be the episode for you, that's fine. But at least you know if you ever decide to.
I don't, like I've said numerous times since we got this started back again, I don't enter competitions for feedback these days. I go to competitions to judge. I have more fun that way, and it's kind of a pain in the butt trying to say, okay, well, look, I can't judge in the Stonefruit because I've got a cherry mead this time, and the historical mead I can do dry or sweet, but I've got a semi-sweet, so you can't put me in that one. And trying to figure out what I'm available for, especially in the final rounds when they're looking for people to do like category judges or mixed tables and things like that. Pain in the butt. It's just so much easier to be like, hey, put me where you need me. I'll do whatever you need me to do. I'm gonna have fun. I'm here to taste stuff.
And what you make, I make. What I make, I make. And that's not yours. Don't worry about it.
I make stuff for me. I don't need a medal. I don't need a score.
Yeah, I agree with that. Unfortunately, because my other mentor Tracy said that since I'm mentoring you, you have to win a medal. I'm sitting here. That's pretty harsh criteria, there, lady. I'm just trying to learn more. But
Oof.
oof, oof. Well,
Anyway.
That was more implied than anything. But I feel the pressure.
Yeah. Well, I am not the taskmaster. I just want a nice drink. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I think that's a great spot to wrap on. We will call that cheers for now, and see you guys
see you next time
next week.
Have a great day.